you who weren't here last night, just to kind of give you a little perspective, I won't review that message again, and you'll be very happy at that. But I just presented, it was not only a confused message, I presented confusion. And the confusion of the chaos of the world, of the speed at which things are changing, and the fact that we can hardly keep up. But that the major problem is not just what's coming in externally, but it's a problem of what's going on inside our lives and the chaos that we ourselves create for ourselves. And you remember I began with a quote from Ecclesiastes, and I won't read it all again, but from the message it says, "In my opinion, nothing is worthwhile. Everything is futile. For what does a man get for all his hard work? Generations come and go, but it makes no difference. We don't remember what has happened in those former times. And in the future generations, no one will know what has been done back here." A little bit hopeless. But the book of Ecclesiastes then ends with this statement. And so as we speak today about the whole issue of power, purpose, and peace, and which brings some solutions to these things, I think a key verse is Ecclesiastes 12. "Now all has been heard. Here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man." Reflective of the, I think the Westminster Confession is reflective of this, not vice versa. And then it says, "For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether good or evil." Now that's scary. So this morning, I'd like to talk about this whole matter of power, purpose, and peace. Let me start by just telling a brief story. In one of my Air Force assignments, I was assigned at Hanscom Air Force Base in Boston, Massachusetts. And there I worked with an active duty colonel. I'll call him, since it's being recorded, Colonel Jack Swenson. That wasn't his name. One day I was in the commander's office. We had a three-star general that was our commander. And I was going to go see the commander. And out of his office came Jack. And I said, "You know, great guy. I know him. Worked with him. Hi, Jack. How you doing?" He said, "Well, I'm not doing good at all." Now, that's not the right answer. You're supposed to say, "Fine, everything's okay," and just go on the way. And I said, "Well, what's up?" He said, "Well, I just told the boss that if he has any plans of my becoming a general, to forget it. I'm out of the race." I said, "Well, what's going on?" And then he asked another, he said, "Well, have you got a minute?" That's another kind of a key question, by the way, when, you know, you want to say, "How are you?" And sometimes we want him to say, "Fine, everything's okay," and then just go on. And I said, "Sure, come on back to my office." And he told me this story. He had recently been promoted to full colonel. And he had this huge promotion party. And by the way, this guy was one of the most creative, energetic, strong leaders, just a rising star in the Air Force. Had about 300 folks that worked for him there at Hanscom. And so they had this big party. And everybody would come up to his wife and tell him what a great guy he was and how if they were in the hospital, they would help him. He'd call him, he'd counsel him, he'd encourage him, and on and on and on ad nauseum. He got home that night, and his wife said, "Why don't you do that for me?" And she left him. Said, "I'm out of here." And so as he sat there telling me that, tears were coming down his eyes. And so we talked about it. What is he going to do? And so he made these commitments. He said, first of all, he's out of the power race and the position race. Secondly, he's not going to go to work till 8 o'clock in the morning. He's going to come home at 5. He's going to serve his wife and his family. He's not going to work weekends. And he started doing that. Now, she did leave him, by the way. And 2 years later, we were both transferred to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I went to his promotion dinner to Brigadier General. He had won his marriage back, and he got promoted. And I walked up and congratulated him, and he introduced me to his father. And he said, "Dad, this is General White. He's the guy who saved my marriage." Now, of course, I didn't. I don't think I spent more than 5 hours with him in the intervening 2 years. Phone call, staff meeting, "How you doing, Jack? What you happen? You keeping it?" And all that. And by the way, when I had him in my office, which you have to be a little careful of, but I prayed with him. And we talked about the gospel. He's a Catholic gentleman. And he felt he knew the Lord. And so we kept this accountability. But here is a man who is swept up in what I call the power chase, only to realize that it was destroying him. And it did destroy him. Now, he won back his marriage, but most don't. Now, every human being, I believe, has the inborn desire to want to control people. And they would control them through money, through business. They want to control their children. They want to control their church. They want to control their health. And as I shared yesterday, in the issue of chaos, the issue is not all that's going on, but the sense that we are not in control. So to be in control, what most people do is they pursue things like power and wealth, ownership, or by their personality or by their position or authority or knowledge or relationships or ability, and then they try to make things happen. Henry Kissinger said, "Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac, that it grips everybody." Now, power is not bad. It can be used for good, or it can be used for evil. And we've seen it throughout history. I love the little story about the power of parents. Chief Police Phil Keith, who was the police of chief of police of Knoxville, Tennessee, he was giving a television interview, or, you know, with how they do the city council, you know, they have the televisions looking in on him. And so he was doing something before him, and he looked down at his pager, and his mother's calling. So, you know, he's a little shook. He excuses himself and goes out to a side room and called his mother. And she said to him, "Phil Keith, are you chewing gum?" He said, "Yes, ma'am." He said, "Well, it looks awful. Spit it out." So he removed his gum, went back into the meeting. The power of mothers is something else. No matter what age you are, mom always has a say. So what I want to talk about today a little bit, I'd like to first talk about power. Then I'd like to have a few words about purpose, how you do it. And thirdly, to talk about peace. And they all fit together. Hopefully within about 30 minutes, we'll try and tie a little knot on that. So let's go to the first slide on this, and let's talk about the differing kinds of power. And somewhere here I've got... Yeah, here we go. Okay, first of all, those don't come on one at a time. They don't sequence on, do they? Oh, well, that's, if I had an overhead, I'd cover them up. Now you get to, you just read it. That's the next point. Now let's move on to purpose. No, we won't do that. Okay. Anyhow, let's just take them one at a time. Okay, the first kind of power is the power of authority. Now, in Matthew 20, 25 through 28, Jesus says, "The rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them." You remember that passage? He says, "But it shall not be so amongst you." So we have authority, sometimes earned, sometimes given, but we need to take great care on how you exercise authority. Again, authority is not bad. But when one thinks that the source of their power is authority, we have a problem. The second is the power of knowledge. You know, whether it be a doctor or a computer expert or a plumber. Don't the doc, Chip, you like that comparison? You know, who bakes the most, by the way? Well, I'm not sure. We won't say about that. But the fact is, everybody has a set of specialized knowledge. And it gives them what? Power. Why? Because they know how to do something that you don't know how to do. And therefore, in that one area of life, they have power. Jack's over here with a bunch of folks from the Air Force, or if you're on a training base, you know, the instructor pilot has the power because he has the knowledge at that moment in time. The third thing is the power of relationships. You know, you have the power of a relationship and you can get a lot done. I remember when my daughter and son-in-law moved to Enid Air Force Base, just up north here. And of course, as usual, she had to come and move everything herself. He was still in Germany, and, you know, it's a normal military thing. So she's trying to move in, and my wife, Mary, is down with her. And so they all had made all this big plan. The goods were coming in on this day, and suddenly they called, and the household goods people said, well, your goods are here, but we're not going to deliver them because the contractor only does it on Mondays and Fridays, something like that. And we said, what? You know, here they made all these plans, they're there for a week, they're going to delay it a week. And they tried everything they could do to get it done. And I finally said, let me make a phone call. All right. Well, it so happens that the director of transportation for the United States Air Force was one of my students at the Air Force Academy, Pete Peterson, who was the commander over at Altus, as you know, for a while. And he was a general in the Pentagon. I said, Pete, I'm really sorry to call you on this, but I got a little problem. And the people were not being exactly customer friendly. So he made one phone call. All of a sudden, these phone calls, well, Mrs. Thompson, I'm going to be right there. We'll take care of you right now. And okay, so what happened? I had a relationship with a person who was in authority, who made one phone call and you got something done. Now, you can misuse that. But the fact is, it is not what you know, it's what. It is who you know in so many aspects of life. So here again, there is a power of relationships that can be used either for good or they can be used for evil. For, you know, our folks over in the third world, the issue of bribery and corruption and all that, and who you know is very, very important. Well, it can be used for bad or be good. Our people have had to do a study on bribery, of when you pay fees and when you don't pay fees. It's an interesting study. I won't go into it now, but they figured out how to do it. Okay, then there's the power of ability and of skill. It's a little bit like the power of knowledge. But Proverbs 22:29 says, do you see a man skilled in his work? He shall stand before kings. He will not be stand before obscure men. And so there is this ability. Now, there are a lot of, I have certain abilities. There are many of them that I don't have. One is the ability to just do household fix-it things. And in fact, one time for our anniversary, I gave Mary this book, Home Repairs Without a Man, which she still uses regularly. And there are other good kinds of skills. I was over in Israel just a month ago, and we walked out onto the field of Elah where David fought Goliath. And there are two little creeks, and one of them probably was the one that he walked down in to get a stone. And then we had this big debate about how big the stone was. Well, one of my friends had been to the Jerusalem Museum, and you know what I think of is a little stone about that big, you know, and he picks up five of them, does it, and pew, and flicks it up. But really, it was a stone that was about that big. Pretty good size, a pretty good momentum, and to take that thing in a leather sling. It was just interesting to stand there. It may not have been right that spot, but it was within half a mile. right there were David and the armies of the Philistines and Israel were sitting on these two hills, and he came out with a skill of being able to use a sling. And it's something else. When a person has skill, it's just wonderful to be able to watch them. In handball, I've got a lot of friends who are just phenomenally skilled. They're just so natural as athletes. I hate to play them, but I love to watch them. But they did get in. Or you see an athlete. Or you see anybody with skill, and it's a wonderful thing. There's a tremendous power to it. But now I'm getting to a couple of them that are, I think, very important. The power of character. And when a person has character, I believe that God gives them tremendous influence and power. And if you want power, get character. Because ultimately, it will be the thing that really helps you. Abraham Lincoln said, "Fame is a vapor, popularity an accident, riches take wings, only one thing endures, and that is character." It will go with you to your grave. It is why our good friend Gene Ward, though he's in the situation he is mentally now, just because of age and what's happened, there's that character, and all of you remember it. And it is something that does not disappear. And when you have a person of ability and knowledge who has character, then you have tremendous respect. And character is, I believe, the core of leadership. And it's the core of what we want to be. Then there's the power of wisdom. In Proverbs 9:10, it says, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom." This is an interesting thing. There are people who are wise who are not spiritual. You know, it's really true. I know non-believers who have tremendous wisdom and insight. In fact, there are times that I will go to them and talk with them and ask them about things. But the great combination is having character, wisdom, with the spiritual foundation. And that brings us to the last one, which is not up there. I guess I didn't put it on that slide. It's the power of spiritual influence. And I believe God wants us to have spiritual influence. Okay, now I'd like to give you a little chart here. We'll see if this works. I think this is supposed to sequence. First of it, where do you get power? Okay, the first thing I believe is you have meaning and purpose. And we're going to talk about that. The second thing that we want to have is we want to have peace, because there is something inside us. When you don't have peace, you can't exercise anything. And then we need a thing called perseverance. And then we want passion. And I believe when you put those four things together, then you get power from God. Okay, there you have the summary of this little book that I did. And that really is all I have to say in that whole book. How to build those four things so that you get power from God. And we really do want power from God. In 2 Corinthians 4, 6, and 7, from the Message, it says this: "If you only look at us, you might well miss the brightness. We carry this presage message around in unadorned clay pots of ordinary lives. That's to prevent anyone from confusing God's incomparable power with us." Now, here's the big danger of having all those power, authority, wisdom, and all that sort of thing. It's really powerful when you meet people like that. And you can have this incredible delusion that it's you. That I'm really something else. You know, that I'm the cat's meow. And it's nothing. But the power, and that's what 2 Corinthians 4, 6, and 7 says, the power comes from God. So let me give you a definition of power. Here it is. People have power when they go through life meeting every circumstance, good or bad, with confidence and dependence on God. They arrive at their older years with the conviction that they have lived life well, with few regrets, that they have used their gifts, power, and time for good and for God, serving their family and neighbors with selflessness and generosity. So that's a way I define power. Now, that's something that, I could put a lot of scripture verses around it, and I'll leave that up for a few moments so that you can think about that. So, what we ultimately want in our lives is we really do want power from God. And I'll just leave that on there for a few minutes, but let me just move to the issue of purpose or meaning. See, everybody wants meaning and purpose in their lives. I don't know how many times I and others have come to a point in our lives, something happens, and it's usually something that just really puts us down. And you start to say there's no purpose. And I had a conversation a few days ago with someone, a young person about 18, I won't tell who it is. And they were just so down, so terrible. And I said, you're not going to do something foolish, are you? Like take your life. Possibility. I said, I even thought how to do it. But I said, I wouldn't be so selfish, I hoped. So I talked on for a good while about that. Because everybody sometimes loses hope. And when you don't see a purpose to living in this postmodern world, the natural thing is to give up and take your own life. I mean, it happens again and again and again. Now, when you think about it, you say, okay, what's my purpose? Well, we'll say, well, I want to grow spiritually. I want to grow intellectually. I want to grow emotionally. I don't want to stagnate. I want to meet all this complexity and chaos, and I want to somehow have a purpose in my life. Because no one wants to be purposeless. We want to be people who do keep going in life. Now, the fact is that our lives will not be pain-free. There are going to be a lot of issues. But when you have meaning and purpose, here's what they provide. Let's go to the next slide. Purpose and meaning are a force. It's something that's just powerful that keeps you going. I think little kids are the best. You know, little kids about 4 years old, they are so focused. They are so determined. They never give up. They keep asking. They keep going. It's great to watch them. I don't know what happens, but later on they lose it. Now you get frustrated with them, but the fact is there's a tremendous force to it. Secondly, it's a motive. And one of the big issues is how to motivate yourself. And then purpose gives you a determination to face life as it comes to you. And finally, it's a way to bring significance an accomplishment to every day. Now, many people, I don't know about most, do not set out purpose. Okay, let me define. It's not goals. It's not priorities. But it's something that is an overall driving purpose. And John shared little of what his is. And others start to develop a purpose in their lives. But there are some pitfalls in this. And I'd like to share what those pitfalls are. First of all, we expect a quick fix. That is, we want to have a one-day seminar. You're going to take 20 minutes tonight, and you're going to figure out your purpose of life. You want it. And it's not going to work. The second thing is that you'll give up. You know, think about diets. exercise. You know, you get that, and pretty soon, well, it's not quite worth it, and so you don't want to do it. The third thing that we find out is that you withdraw. You finally say, I'm just not going to put on up with it. And Simon and Garfunkel wrote a song that has some words went like this. I touch no one and no one touches me. In other words, they just withdraw in their lives. And then the next pitfall is in the pursuit of purpose, you don't do first things first. I'm the greatest fiddler arounder. You know, I can be sitting in my office or sitting somewhere, then there's this little thing, then there's this little thing, then a beep comes up and there's an email, and then there's this, and then there's... And all of a sudden, I find out I'm not doing anything that I set out... You don't have that problem, do you? Doesn't happen to you at all. I mean, you're so focused, you... whatever. But see, all of us have this business that we don't do first things first. And I shared with the... How many of you are from the BSU here? We're into my Thursday night deal. Are a few of you here? Oh, three or four of you are. And I shared with them that I made a commitment to God in my grad school. I didn't have wisdom to do it in undergrad. That before I cracked the books on my own, that I'd have time with God. Before I did anything in the day of my own choice. Now, I'd go to class or if I had to go to work or whatever. But that I would have some time with God. See, it's a first thing first. And you just have to do it. And then the last thing I want to put in this pitfalls is simply this. Not be rebuilding cracked foundations in your life. We've got to take time to do it. Now, I'd like to give you just a little bit of an exercise. And unfortunately for time, we don't have much time. But I'm going to give you a minute or two. And I want you to answer this question. Just write down two or three things quickly. If, you know, I will be satisfied at the end of my life if, and fill in two or three things. Okay, do it right now. Okay. Wake up out there. We gotta do it now. It's actually homework time. Okay, write in there. At the end of my life, when I come to the end of my life, I'll be pleased if. And write down two or three things. Okay, just share one or two. Will you? Someone just raise a hand and give me one of them. Okay. Okay. Effective father to your children. What else? Kept the faith. Okay, we won't go on. I'd love to just share. And what I'd love for you to do is to continue working on that. And 10 days ago, I was in Malaysia, and I had our staff work extensively, some key leaders on this, because they're changing out of jobs. But I divided it into, I'll be satisfied not only spiritually, but physically, emotionally, and mentally. And I had them do it in all four areas. Now, what we tend to do is this. We tend to put father, spiritual, and various other things, and that's all good. But what really drives us is usually not those things. And we don't put things about money. We don't put things about career as though they're kind of bad. And so I want to relieve your guilt just a little bit. And I think that in this process, you may want to include a few things like, I've accomplished some satisfying career goals. Now, you talk to most people, when they talk about the past, well, what'd you do? Well, I was an engineer and they want to tell those stories, don't they? There is a satisfaction with having accomplished certain things in life. And it isn't just that I had a quiet time. Now, I know it's hard to balance these. We know the spiritual is a lot, but we're human beings. And so there is a satisfaction that comes from having done your work and having done it well. So don't be embarrassed about it. See, I believe that God leads us to work. Now, that's a whole other topic. And that work is ministry. And that serving mankind is also ministry. So something about career goals. Also, I think it'd be wise to put something about money, that I've reached some financial goals for my family. Okay, you got a few people in here that sell insurance. You got a few people that do this, that, you know, and all. I don't want you to go back and say, gee, I'm just doing nothing, you know, and I'm not helping. Sure, you're helping people. And it's not bad to think about retirement and those kinds of things. Or you might want to say, it would be nice to be remembered by my peers as having been a faithful, godly man. Do you see what I mean? Your reputation. Now, there's some other things that I put in the book. It's not just, quote, these big spiritual deals. So when you're thinking of purpose, don't neglect your career. Don't neglect things about education. There are good things in life that you spend most of your time doing, but you're a little embarrassed to write them down, see, as purpose. And for a believer, they are meaningful. So I just want to help you on that a little. So, but ultimately, I believe meaning in the midst of chaos is living, first, a life with purpose, and secondly, a life without regret. In 1 Corinthians 10:31, it says, whatever you do, do it all to the glory of God. You know, some portion of my testimony, at least, is for some of the things that I did in my secular career. It connects me with people. Now, it's not true. I'm going to tell you the story, but and what the guy said about me, honestly, is not true, but it was an interesting statement. 3 weeks ago in Washington, D.C., and a guy I'd been witnessing to, an astronaut, he's now Undersecretary of the Air Force, and we were walking around this exposition, and he introduced me to somebody, and because I'd written that book that Harold mentioned on astrodynamics, so this is the father of astrodynamics, he introduced me as. Because everybody who does that field basically has this textbook in front of that's still on their shelf. Now, I'm not. Okay. I just happen to have a little part. But do you see the connection career-wise and the reputation was because of some little thing I did? And so that gives us the connection. Whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not unto men. Now, God may not give you success. God may not give you a reputation in certain ways, but when he does, it's for his glory. And then James 1:22, be doers of the word and not hearers only. Now, I've only got a few minutes, and Harold, I'm going to cut into your coffee break for just a tiny bit. Maybe we were 3 minutes later starting. Okay, whatever it is. I'll take whatever excuse I can get. Because I want to just say a word or two about peace. Something happened to me about 2 weeks ago. And I was so miserable. It happened while I was on that trip to Asia, and I couldn't sleep. I was so anxious, and I was so worried. And I hate the feeling. I just hate it. Because I know, but it happens to you too. And I'm not immune from this. And it was just this lack of peace. It happened to be with an incident and with some things going on with somebody. But I was just had a terrible, terrible time. And the fact is that what I wanted was peace, not anxiety. And there are a lot of things that I could share, but for instance, Proverbs 14:13 says, even in laughter, the heart may ache. And so there is something that we all want that's very, very deep down in our lives. And I had some quotes I was going to give you on happiness. Most people are not happy. I did some research for this book, and it found that money didn't make people happy. Accomplishment did not make people happy, and it was most people end up lives unhappy and without peace. So let's ask a couple questions. What is peace? Now think about this for a minute. Is it, for instance, the absence of conflict. Now, it isn't, because you're going to have conflict all the time. In fact, when you don't resolve conflict, it may give you lack of peace. Is it the ability to endure and prosper in complexity and chaos? Well, I think that's partially what it is. Or is it a head-in-the-sand mentality that'll just say it'll all work out? You know, if I don't pay any attention to it, it'll go away. Well, that's not peace. Or is it withdrawal from the reality and unwillingness to confront things? No, it's not. Is it personal security? I don't think so. Hezekiah made one of the most dreadful statements I've ever heard. Remember when God said that what he's going to do to Israel? But he said it'll be after you die. And he said, well, as long as it's not in my lifetime, it's okay. But it reminded me how much I avoid dealing with things. Well, let's see, now I've left the presidency of the Navigators and I just leave these problems and it doesn't happen under my watch. No, see, there's an escapism that we just can't live with. Or is it just a theological aspect? I don't think it is. First of all, I believe that peace comes only from Jesus. And it's a peace that he says, peace I leave with you. My peace I give unto you. Not as the world gives, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid. See, God, through Jesus, gives that peace. And it's unexplainable. It's something that you can't even quite describe because you're going through the midst of chaos. And yet there's peace. And so we can see him do it. And I believe, by the way, it's an inner peace. The word shalom, peace, is used 200 times in the scriptures. And in 2/3 of those times, it refers to the presence of God giving you peace. Somehow just sensing that God is there. And by the way, in the Old Testament, the word is almost always connected to righteousness. When peace and righteousness have kissed. You see? And it has to do with the way that we live your life. Now, there are three types of peace. And then I'm going to tell you a story, and then we'll wind it up here. First of all, there's a truth or a fact-based peace. That is that you know from the Word that you're okay. You know that God will make good out of evil. You know that Romans 8:28 is true. So that is a truth issue. But that sometimes doesn't give you the next one, and that's an emotion-based peace. That is that I feel the peace. I understand it, but I don't experience it. So 2 weeks ago, that was my problem. I knew it, but I didn't have it. See, it wasn't inside. And then there is an experience-based peace. That is, over time, you've seen God lead. And therefore, you know out of experience that God will lead in the future. That's a problem with an 18-year-old or a 22 or a 25-year-old. The experience level has not been there. You've not seen God actually do it. And then finally, there's a faith-based piece of trusting God. Now, peace is slow to come. And I want to give you a little illustration on this. The fellow that replaced me in my last Air Force job, and I have his permission to share this story, by the way. His name is Major General Ed Meckenbeier. Someone probably read a year ago May when they flew the last remains of the POWs or of the killed in actions out of Vietnam. They took in a C-141 and brought out. The guy that flew that was Ed Meckenbacher because he was a POW for 5.5 years in Vietnam. And so I asked Ed a few questions when we to ask him about his experience. Academy grad, and he says, you know, here I was flying over Vietnam, hottest pilot in the Air Force, had everything whirled by its tail, and all of a sudden his F-4C was hit at 2:15 p.m. on June 14th, 1967. And he says, the next thing I knew, my airplane had been blown out from under me, and I was hanging there in a parachute. And he landed on the ground, he told me, and he said that he was captured almost immediately. And there were several of us that they captured on that mission. And as they herded them through the village, beating us and throwing stones at us, then they stopped and lined us up by several graves. And then they put a firing squad out there. And then they'd say, ready, aim. Oh, no, wait, we need some more pictures. And then they did some more things. And then they got the firing squad again and says, ready, aim. I said, no, we need to do more pictures. And they went on and did that about 5 times. He says, after about the 4th time, I looked up on the hill. And there was a statue of Mary Magdalene, because remember, the French had occupied Vietnam, and so there were a lot of those. And he looked up and says, you know, this is a good day to die, but I don't think I will, and I'm going to be okay. And somehow a peace, he said, a peace came over. Didn't last. He got thrown into the prison, and he says, as I was there, one day I got so angry with God, and he just said, Jesus, if you're here, make this bed move. Now all of a sudden he says, I would never have said that if I didn't believe he was there. He says, okay, you don't have to make the bed move. Okay, now, so those are your little stories, give you a little idea of Ed. But here's the question I asked him. I said, Ed, when did you know that you were going to be released? He says, well, they started feeding us better. So we knew something was going. Then they started giving us clean clothes. And then they said, you're going to be released. But he said, I didn't believe him. So they'd done that many times. And then they'd pull this on us and pull that on us. And I said, well, when did you really believe it? And he says, well, it was on February 3rd, 1973, 5 days after the peace agreement. He said, we heard we were going to be released. And I said, did you believe it? And he said, no way. Can't be true. More lies. And he said, well, when did you... Then I said, when did you really believe it? He says, well, on February 18th, 1973, we were put in buses. And were transported to the airport. And he said, I saw the airplane with United States Air Force. And I thought, well, I hope it's real, but I'm not out yet. Something could still go wrong. And I said, then again, I asked him, when did you really believe it? He says, well, we walked by my captors who had beat me, and we signed these things. I said, did you believe it then? No. Said, we walked silently out to the airplane. And I said, did you believe it then? He says, no, we still weren't out of there. Saluted the guy at the bottom, walked up on the airplane. I said, did you believe it when you were sitting on the airplane? He says, no, not quite. I said, when did you really believe it? He says, when the tires of that C-141 broke the runway, we all stood up and started yelling and screaming. By the way, there are photographs of this. In the movie called Return with Honor. You're just screaming and yelling. I said, were you sure? He said, well, we weren't out of Vietnamese airspace yet. So the next step was when we crossed into South Vietnam. I said, did you really believe it then? So I wasn't quite sure. So then they took us to Guam, and they fed us, and then to Hawaii. And then he says, I said, when did you really know you were free? He says, when we landed in San Francisco, and my family ran. Now, he said, then I knew I was free. Peace is like that. It's not instantaneous. But as you walk through life, step by step, you begin to experience the reality of the peace that was already there. See, everybody knew Ed was free, but he didn't feel it until he experienced it and then embraced it. That's what you need to do. Let's pray. Father, help us today to experience your peace, to know your purpose for our lives, and to be able to embrace that power that comes from you. We pray in Christ's name. Amen.